But this year actually precedes in time what we discussed last week, but thematically it follows. That's why we did it this way. I want to discuss tonight, this is actually the 29th year in the Navi, Shaul and David, the hunter and the hunted. Now, it's a very difficult area to discuss, obviously. In large part, I think, because the facts are very well known, and the story itself is such that on the surface, an initial impression is that Shaul is out of his mind and evil, and David is a virtuous victim who's harassed. And I don't think that'll change in a sense, except for one point that's very important to discuss. I mean, our minds are closed, but yet our minds should be opened, because if it's not, if they're not, the story will be very hard to understand. And we have to pursue some investigation of how such a thing is possible beyond what's an obvious answer, that one person was out of his mind and harassed the Mashiach Hashem. Because obviously it's not so simple. Shaul HaMelech was not only described by us last year when we first encountered him as a tzaddik free of sin, but he's perceived by Chazal as well to be a very righteous person. So much so, if you look at number 3, the Zohar says, why didn't God just remove Shaul from his monarchy? Why did he have to die? Meaning, if Shmuel took away his monarchy, so why didn't he just abdicate? Or God would encourage him to abdicate, and instead of having him die at the hands of the Plishtim. God did a kindness for him, Shemes Betor Melech, that he died while he was still a king. And he should not see his servant rule over him, David, dominate him, and take everything that belongs to him. So we'd ask ourselves, why is God showing any special treatment for Shaul HaMelech? And we'll see tonight, after what he's doing to David, and it continues for weeks and weeks, really for the rest of his life, why show him any deference at all? So we have to open our minds and tell ourselves that there's something else beneath the surface. And that is, of course, the Yad Hashem. That's the Hashgacha. A divine providence operates in ways that we cannot fully understand, but certainly have to explore and explicate. And no doubt this event is one which requires a tremendous amount of understanding and explication. Look at number 1, Rav Yigal Ariel in Yehoz Melech. Parshat Radifato Shel Shaul Achar David Imin HaParshiot HaKashot BaTanach. This parsha of the pursuit by Shaul of David is one of the most difficult in all of Tanakh. If for no other reason than Hashkacha Metziva Shnei Melachim HaMishamshim B'Keter Echad Matzav Bilti Afshiri Bilti Nisbal. He cites the Gemara in Chulin, which says, in fact, in the negative, Ein Shnei Melachim Mishamshim B'Keter Echad. Two kings cannot share one crown. It's an impossible, intolerable situation. And that's exactly what Shaul and David confront. They are forced in a situation that Gemara says is untenable, to have two kings sharing one crown. Min hapakad hazot toveh hashgachat malcheo ubonet malchut Yisrael. But from this breach, the Hashgacha weaves together the entire process which builds the monarchy of Israel. Michad zeh malach elyon. From one perspective, this is a divine process, a lofty process. Shebo ein malchut nogad b'chaverta filu kimelo nimo. That one malchus, not only can two kings not share one crown, but in fact, one malchus, one kingship, never even encroaches on another to a hair's breadth. it's not possible. It's two separate monarchies. I'm always reminded of this Gemara on Inauguration Day. So tomorrow's Election Day. Don't forget to vote. Vote for my candidates, of course. But beyond that, on Inauguration Day, when the presidency changes hands, so the old president is standing next to the new one, and the new one is sworn in, and then almost immediately the old president is whisked away on his final ride on Air Force One out of town. That's Ein Malchus Nogas B'Chaverta Afilu K'Melo Nimo. One government, one monarchy cannot encroach on another. Can't be. And yet you have it here. Meidoch, on the other side, he Yotzeret Ben Hashnayim Hitmodedut Musarit V'Munit Murkevet U'Musubechet. It creates between these two an ethical and ideological struggle, which is very complicated and problematic. Hanogat HaTahoma Nefesh, which stretches into the depths of the soul. And min hashamayim ein mafshirim lohem l'tchamek min haziro min hamavak. From heaven, neither is allowed to withdraw from the arena, from the struggle. You never see David say, "All right, enough already, I'll wait for him to die, then I'll become the king." Or Shaul say, "Let him have it. What is this, Meshuggah?" No, from heaven they're not allowed to withdraw. U'maltzim otam lagia l'achra yishit v'abchira musarit. But they're forced to reach some personal decision as well as some ethical choice. Sofo shel ha'malach ha'anoshi ha'bchiri milamata lovi toch hityasrut v'tchavchut rabo el ha'totzah mekaveh milamalo. So the end of their process is to achieve really the divine goal, which is in fact what happens. So there's another way of looking at this, which I want to explore tonight, and that is there's supposed to be a struggle. And this struggle, we'll see a little later, touches on, once again, that great rivalry which exists almost from the dawn of our nationhood, and that is the rivalry between Rachel and Leah. Here you have Shaul HaMelech, who's a Ben Rachel, as Yehoshua ben Nun was. Yehoshua ben Nun was from Ephraim, and Shaul was from Binyamin, so they're both Bnei Rachel, who's the younger sister, yet the preferred wife of Yaakov, and they have to, as we'll see, somehow abdicate, give up their monarchy to the Bnei Leah in the guise of Shevet Yehuda. A transition like this is not supposed to be easy, because the Bnei Rachel contribute something, and the Bnei Yehuda contribute something else. So transition from one to the other is never smooth, and that's the way it's supposed to be. Now the Mishpat Zov in 2, he makes the point in a very stronger way. Quotes the Gemara Menachos on Kuf Tes Amud Beis, Tanya, Omer B'Shua Ben Prachya, B'tchilo Kol Omer Li Aleilo Ani Kofato V'Nosna Lufnei Ari. At first, when someone said to me, "Go ascend and take this position of authority," had he told me that, I would have bound him up and placed him under a lion to be trampled and devoured. Because who wants to be a leader of the Jewish people? Ata, now that I have the position, he was the Nasi. Now that I have this position, one of the Zugas with Nita Harbeli. Ata, now, kol omer li lered mimeno. Anyone who tells me that I have to leave this position, ani matil alav kumkum shel chamin, I'll pour upon him a flask of boiling water, all right? Which, I mean, it's human nature, and we can understand that's why it's very hard to get rid of people once they assume positions of authority. What's his proof? Shaharei Shaul barach mimena. At the beginning, Shaul fled the appointment of Shmuel. He didn't want to be king. Ukshalo b'kesh l'argas David. And once he became the king, he didn't want to leave. That being said, Rav Weiss continues, V'nei afal pi shapir mevur b'divrei chazal mefarshim. Nevertheless, despite this, harei shekol haredifos shehoya shol rodef es David hayu me'eis HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All the pursuits of Shaul, of David by Shaul, they're all min hashamayim. Shesibev kol zeh k'nisayon l'David HaMelech. All this was arranged that it should be a test, a trial for David, as Chazal say on the Pasuk, when David, learn this in a couple of months, I guess, when David finally encounters Shaul in the cave, and Shaul says to him, is that you, David Bini, my son David? And David said, yes, it's me, your son, your child, your servant. Why are you trying to kill me? So he said, V'ata yishmana Adonai HaMelech, as Devrei Avda, listen to what you're telling me. Im Hashem has his chobi, if God has incited you against me. Meaning, maybe I have some sins, so therefore you're the Shaliach Hashem to destroy me. So David himself recognized, Shal yibor lo David, shekol haradifa sherodefa so shaul akom es Hashem. David realized everything is coming from God. If he's to be pursued, so this is God's will. Shemachnis b'leiv shaul sheirdof es David, kiu l'onsa. He's chasing Shaul, chasing David as if David is his enemy. In fact, he goes on to say, when Chazal count the sins of Shaul HaMelech, in the Gemara Yomad of Chav Beis Amid Beis, what do they say, count, what do they construe as a sin? Amalek, that he left Agag alive. Chazal never count this as a sin. Muzar Ma'od. They never count this as a sin of Shaul HaMelech, trying to kill David. It's not counted. Vimke, what's that? Thanks for coming. Why? That's the question.
It's already
come. Because, as they say, because it's Meis Hashem. He's not acting in a normal way. He's being... What's that? Yeah, so that's what you have to understand. What's that? Yeah, but that was Amalek. He didn't say it here. Shmuel never gets involved in this dispute. Which is also surprising. Shmuel Anovi, you know, the only sin of Shaul was with Amalek.
So, but Shmuel says,
you sinned. That's correct. That's correct. That was the sin with Amalek.
So why did they say there's
no
sin?
No, so the question is, why did they say this is a sin too? Or you tried to kill an innocent man? That's the question. Very strange. Even more strange. What does Shmuel Anovi do? Shmuel who anointed the both of them. Does he intervene? We'll come to him tonight. No, he does not get involved. Also very strange. Mediate. You know, put your arm around Shaul, said, you had a good run. You know, you served your term. You know what happened. It's God's will. You have to move on. No. Apparently the plan was not that Shaul would abdicate, but that Shaul HaMelech would continue as Melech and fight against David. And we have to understand what the nisyonos here of David are. Why was David subjected to these trials? Now, does this excuse Shaul? No, I wouldn't say that. As he says in the third paragraph, Af al pi shekamor al pi Hashem hoya kol zos, mikol makom hare hashgacha po'ela sim ha'adam al pi yishtamshus b'mido shelo uvitvoyim shelo. We know divine providence always utilizes people's basic nature and their character traits, people's bechira, in order to fulfill its will. So that's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates in the world. People don't do things that are not in line with their personalities. They do things which are in line with their personalities. And God is able to manipulate it when it's something of national import in order to fulfill His will. The classic example we have, story of Purim, where God took really the character flaws of Ahasuerus and Haman and weave the tapestry which then created the Geula for Klal Yisrael, the Yeshua in that situation. That's Megalgulin Zchus Aydei Zakai V'chov Aydei Chayav V'imlisho Lohiya Mafriya V'koi V'arodo Me'amalchus U'mashe David Yismanev Imkomo. If it didn't bother David, if it didn't bother Shaul, didn't cause a tremendous pain that he'd been demoted and that David would replace him, there never would have been aroused within him this melancholy, this terrible spirit, which would cause him to pursue David. If we see Shaul as God's choice, which he was, then certainly being demoted is very difficult. You're not only the king, which is, in a sense, a secular position. You're the Bechir Hashem, God's choice, his monarch, which makes it a religious position too. And now you're neither. Certainly it's very difficult for anybody. So Chazal say, well, Shaharei Shaul, in the beginning, Barach Mimen, he didn't want the kavod. But now, he killed David for it. Because that was the deterioration of his personality. So to say that Shaul sinned here really is not completely dispositive. It doesn't end the discussion. We have to understand why such a thing then was allowed to exist. What, in fact, were the nisyonos that David HaMelech had to undergo, had to endure, in order to be worthy of Malchus? Let's look at the story now. Beginning today in Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk He, in number 4. First, Shaul's jealousy is ignited. Vayetze David b'chol asher yishlachenu Shaul yaskil. David went out, and Shaul appointed him first as a minor officer, and he was very successful. Vayisineh Shaul al anshei melchama. He appointed him over the other soldiers. Vayitav b'nei ha'om kol ha'om v'gam b'nei avdei Shaul. Everybody liked David, the people as well as Shaul's officers. When David returned from killing the Goliath, all the women came out to sing, to praise, to extol the warriors. And the rejoicing women called out with this refrain, Hikashu balafav v'David berivosav. Shaul has slain his thousands, David his tens of thousands. Vayichar l'Shaul mod, so Shaul was very angry. Vayirah b'inav adavar, and this aggrieved him tremendously. Vayomer, and he said, whether he said to someone, worse, whether he just said it to himself, Nasnu David rivavos, Velinasnu alafim. David, they said, killed tens of thousands, me just thousands. In fact, who did David kill? He killed only one person. Where Shaul was fighting their wars for a few years already. Ve'od lo acham lucha. The only thing he's lacking now is the actual kingship. They'll want him to be the king. At this moment, Shaul suspected David would be the one to replace him. Vayehi Shaul oyenes David mayomahu v'hola. Shaul then began eyeballing David with suspicion from that day on. What's oyen? Rashi says, ayin ra'ah, the evil eye. What's the evil eye? What's an ayin ra'ah? An ayin ra'ah, in fact, Chazal Sein Avos, one of the traits of the Talmidim of Bila Marasha, ayin ra'ah. Ayin ra'ah means that you look at something and it's automatically jaundiced. It's an experience that we all have on occasion. There's someone who so rubs us the wrong way that they can't do anything positive. They can't do anything that you will interpret favorably. Whatever you see in them, it's ra'ah. That means your eye is a bad eye. Ayin ra'ah, as opposed to ayin tova. Ayin tova, whatever happens to someone else, you rejoice and you're happy for them. Ayin ra'ah, you see the worst. And you find sometimes, you know, people don't always get along. I don't break the news to anyone. Not everyone, Tina gets along with everybody else. And something can happen which is neutral or even pleasant. And someone doesn't like them and they'll interpret it unfavorably. That's ayin ra'ah. Whatever the person does bothers you. His speech, his walk, his breathing, whatever it is bothers you. That's ayin ra'ah. And that's how Shaul now started to look at David. Rav Ariel comments, interestingly, if you just look at the phrase, Hikash Shaul balafav v'David berivosav, Shaul, had he not had the ayin ra'ah, which is a mental state, by the way, not a visual state, he could have interpreted favorably. Because what does it mean literally? That Shaul requires only thousands to fight his battles. But David requires tens of thousands to fight his battles, which is in fact the bracha in Bichukosai, right? That some will chase Shnaim Yonisu Echad will chase Elef, Shnaim Yonisu Rebava. One will chase 1,000, two 10,000. So he could have darshened it, but he couldn't because he had the Ayin Ra, and therefore it completely blinded him to anything else going on. What was happening? So he sensed right away that that David was a threat not only to his monarchy, but more importantly to his legacy and to his posterity. You remember that Shmuel told him the monarchy was stripped from you and being given to one who's better than you. All right, L'Re'acha Tov Mimecha, someone who's better than you. So Shaul could reason, maybe it's my son. What's wrong with my son? So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, in fact, Tzadi Gimel Amid Beis, that when the Pasuk says, we read this a few parakim back, about all the qualities of the Melech Yisrael, Bikuhu Amar Lehu, it's number 6 here. After each of them, Shaul said, Yehonatan b'ni kamohu, my son Yehonatan, he's perfect for the job because he has all the qualifications. But Kev under Amar Leva Shemimo, once they said there's another qualification of Melech Yisrael, God is with him, and that's not something within one's personal control, then that's Milsa de Namilo Havabe. Yonason did not have that because that's God's choice. Cholash Daite Vikanyo Be. He became he weakened, and he became very jealous because then he saw that he's not going to, Yehonatan was not going to succeed him. Now that, of course, adds to Shaul's Agmas Nefesh, because if you remember from last week, part of the problem that we raised last week was that his son, who he thought would succeed him, is now in David's camp. So he doesn't even have a natural ally in the person for whom, in large part, he's fighting the battle. So that just adds to his frustration. What happens then? Vayimi Moharos, the day after this victory parade, it's number 7. Vatitzlach ruach Elohim ra'al Shaul v'yisnabe b'soch habayis v'david menagem b'yado k'yom b'yom v'chanis b'yad Shaul. The very next day, the Spirit of God, the evil spirit, depression, melancholy, comes over Shaul v'yisnabe. So literally it means he began to prophesy. But that's not usually the word that's used for prophecy. But Yisnabe here, Rashi says in 9, means v'ishtati. He acted insanely, meaning he started to rave incoherently. He started to babble about a number of things. V'sochabayis. So as always, David came to play the harp, to bring him back to a state of lucidity. Why is Vayisnabe the Ishtati? So Rashi continues, because Navi v'shoteh medabrim divrei rimazim sheinam nikorim. Both the prophet and the crazy person, they speak in allusions, in riddles that people don't understand. They say things that are indecipherable. So the Navi has divrei emes, the shote has divrei shtus, but neither are intelligible to the listener. That's the pshat that most of Mepharshim have. But the Abarbanel, who I guess knew his share of loony monarchs in Portugal and Spain, says a different pshat in number 10. Abarbanel says that it happened the very next day. Why the very next day? Third line. The Adamish Omar mi Mocharas Lagid Sheshaul Spael Ma'od mi Divrei Hanashim Ha'Shananos Ha'Mecholos. It seems that Shaul was very exercised by what these women were singing. And right away he started thinking, if me, Shaul the king, and David are put in the same sentence, it must be that he is my successor. And that's what he deduced from what they were saying. Uvios hadimyon gover bo rayonov al mishkavov sliko. So his imagination, really his unconscious, took over. Vayesnabei, the Barbanel said, doesn't mean he was talking out loud. It means his mind became gripped with a fantasy. His unconscious ran wild that David is the one, and he cannot overcome that. So really he slept on it. And while he slept, he had a very unpleasant night's sleep. And these thoughts could not leave his mind, and he woke up depressed. Iruach also means a person's will. And he skipped down a few lines. He quotes the Rambam in the Mora, who says that that the very next day, after he heard this refrain, these thoughts intruded his mind. Wrote Salomar, what was being said again and again, that is to say, Likra mimen amalchus, v'yisnabe besoch habayis. He woke up with the thought, my monarchy is going to be torn away from me. Meaning Shaul was living with the specter of Shmuel's prophecy over his head, but yet he never saw, in the immediate sense, it being carried out. And now for the first time he sees that. And he says, in fact, the Rambam and the Mor, there's a difference between Navi and Misnabe. That Navi is one who's Mushpa Be'emes, Mashem Yisbarach. The Navi is the one who's influenced with the truth. He becomes a receptacle of the truth. But a Misnabe is Ish HaMechina Atzmo Mishtadel Odas Asidos U'Mispoded Aleihem. A Misnabe is a person who is just speculating about the future. And that's the pshat here. What beset Shaul when he awoke in the morning? His future. He couldn't get the jingle out of his head. The song preyed on his unconscious, and it just rekindled thoughts of the nevuah. And so Shaul desperately wanted to know the end of the story. What's going to be his future? But he didn't have true nevuah. So what happens? Kino. He's overcome by jealousy. He's overcome by this Ruach Ra. It's interesting that Chazal say as well, one of the Mefarshim, that one of Shaul's original errors, if you think back to last year, that when he became the king and someone insulted him and said, this is the king of Israel, Vayihi kemacharish, he was silent. He didn't rebuke the person. He didn't have him executed, although that was his right. Vayihi kemacharish. So Chazal and Yoma criticized him, said he lost the Malucha because he was Mochel al Kvodo. He waived his honor. So what happens to Shaul now? From a starting point of Mechilas Kvodo, now he becomes obsessively and extremely Makpid al Kvodo. And that's the beginning of his downfall. The jealousy, the Ruach Ra, he wants to reinforce the trappings of his monarchy by insisting on an extreme version of Kvod Malchus, and he gets it into his head that now is the time to kill David. Note, just to take a break, we haven't yet discussed how all these things are nisyonos for David HaMelech. That we'll get back to towards the end of this year. But tonight, let's look now briefly at the initial episodes, where Shaul tries to kill David, and David finally catches on that his life is in danger. So first, number 7 continues. David is playing, Vachanis biyad Shaul. Shaul holds in his hand a spear. Vayotel Shaul asachanis, Vayomer Shaul held the spear in his hand, and he said, Akebe David uvakir. David sitting against the wall playing his harp, I'll throw the spear through David into the wall. And that's what he did. Vayisov David mipanav pamayim. And David happened to turn twice. So as the Malbim says in 11, Hayarotzel akosa kibilti miskaven el David, rak el akir. Shaul pretended he was just throwing it aimlessly towards the wall. All right? And as if he would have hit him accidentally. But David moved. Zehoya bashgachas Hashem. This was divine providence. Ki David hayu eino bekinor v'lo roma shashol osa. David was playing his harp. He was looking right at the harp. He wasn't looking at Shaul. All of a sudden, he moves slightly, and a spear goes right where his head was a moment before. And it happens again. Rak Hashem izmin shesot mipana b'lo kavana. But God caused him to move. Uvazera shul b'chush ki ashgocha pratis dvukam David. Here Shaul saw that something's afoot. Reminded me, if I may access my vast store of insignificant knowledge, if you think at the very end of The Day of the Jackal, Frederick Forsyth's novel, and the movie of the same name, so when the jackal gets finally a shot at the French president, everything is lined up, he sneezed. That's correct. He sneezes and his head moves forward as the bullet whizzes by. That's essentially what happened here. David is playing the harp, and twice he just moves his head or shifts his body as the spear is coming towards him. So David doesn't suspect anything. He just turned. Vayirosh Shaul milifnei David. Shaul's now afraid, as the Malm pointed out. Ki haya Hashem imo, because God was with David. To Shaul now he looks invincible. Umeim Shaul sar, but God had turned away from Shaul. So now he does something else. He gives him a new job. Enough with the harp. Now appointing you a captain, you're going to battle. All right? What was the intention there? Get killed in battle. Correct. Yeah. He still got killed in battle, though. Right. This pasuk familiar to everyone, I hope. We say it Matzai Shabbos in Vayitan Lecha. I was afraid of that. So, Vayhi David lechol drachav maskil v'ashem imo. Okay, Lenny knew it. Right? David was successful in everything that he did. V'ashem imo. What made him successful? He used his seichel. It's true, but ultimately, Hashem Imo, God is with him. If God is not with a person, he's not such a maskil in the end. So, Vayar Shul, Asher hu maskil ba'od, Vayogar mipanov. Shul is very successful. Where is he successful in battle? He's even more afraid of him. Worse, the intention was to send him out to fight. Lemaisa, by the way, when David became the officer, he was a captain, there were no battles, because the Plishtim were afraid of David. So what happened? David now is the captain. He is the war hero who mingles with the troops, with the common folk, and he becomes very popular. V'chol Yisrael v'Yehuda ohevez David. All of Israel and Judea, they love David. Ki yotzei v'vo lifneihem. The king is in his palace. Luf, he's a melech. But David, not only is he a war hero, but he's a war hero with a common touch. So Shaul tries to have him kill the spear, doesn't work. Tries to have him kill by sending him out to battle, there are no battles and wars. David, who was just, you know, Audie Murphy, he was one Madrega war hero. But now, you know, he's with the people. Now he starts to have a following. So it's exactly the opposite of the intention that Shaul had when he dispatched David. Third plan, to kill him, marry him to one of Shaul's daughters. Vayomer Shaul, this is now number 12. Vayomer Shaul David, hinei viti agdola merav, osa tein lecha lisha. I want to give you, he says now, my daughter Merav is your wife. Now we have to note that Shaul had promised great wealth, his own daughter as a wife, and a permanent tax-free existence to any person who killed Goliath. After it happened, Shaul reneged. It was like a sweepstakes where there's a catch, and you didn't quite win, even if you think you did. So now he says, no, now I'm giving you Merav. So in fact, what happens? Ach heyeli leven chayal bilochem elchamas Hashem. As long as you go to battle, fight my wars. V'shaul Amari said to himself, Al ti yadivo. I don't want to kill him. Won't look good. Usivo yad plishtim. Let the plishtim fight against him. So David first objects, saying with all his sincere modesty, Mi anochi? Who am I? Mi chayai mishpachas avi b'Yisrael? What is my family? What's my lineage in Israel? Ki echason lamelech, that I should be a son-in-law to the king. Vayi be'ez teisis me'rav v'ashu l'David, v'hinit no l'adriel m'cholati l'isho. But when it came time to actually marry Merav, she had already accepted kiddushin from someone else. Now, it's big machlokas here. The Gemara looks at this from a halachic sense. Firstly, did David ever give kiddushin to Merav? And the Gemara says that he gave the kiddushin, the money that was owed to him from Shaul for killing Goliath. And the question is whether Milva Pruta, the woman who was receiving the Milva, really here the renunciation of the money, is her das on the Milva or on the Pruta? On the Pruta. So Shaul held that it's on the Milva. David held on the Pruta. So in fact, Machokas, and we paskin, there was no Kiddush. Others say that he never gave Kiddushin at all, but that she herself went on her own and married Adriel. It's possible to say also that Shaul did this intentionally, so as to taunt David, as if to put him in his place. Here I offer you Merav, and then before you marry her, I take her away and give her to someone else. But something else happens now that the thought is in the air. Vatehav Michal bar Shaul as David. Michal, another daughter of Shaul, loved David, and they told Shaul, Vayishar Dov Reinov. So in fact, he married Michal. Now, Michal bar Shaul is a very fascinating woman that we'll discuss also a little later on in the year. What's that? No. Merav was the oldest. Michal is known to us for a variety of things. They had a very strange story, their relationship. We know in the Gemara Erevin as one of the women who wore tefillin. So we'll get back to Michal bar Shaul later in the year. But Michal loved David. All right? So what was the plan now that Shaul had? First, I'll marry Michal to David. Usila l'mokesh. She'll be the snare. Utivo yad plishtim. The plishtim will attack him. How? So he says, he commands, he tells his servants, go get David. I want you to marry Michal. Vato ischatem b'melech. So they came to David, and the David said, how can I marry? Again, hanekalo v'nechem. Ischatem b'melech. V'anochi ish rosh v'nekleh. I'm a lowly person. So the king's servant said, no, you should marry. This is what the king wants. And this is what Shaul said. Ein chefetz l'melech b'mohar. I don't want a dowry. All right, you don't have to pay me any money for Michal. What I want, ki be'mea arlos plishtim. I want 100 plishti foreskins. All right? Presumably after they've been killed, not while they've been alive, which is a more difficult feat to accomplish. Linokem be'oivei ha'melech. In order to avenge the enemy, take vengeance on the enemies of the king. Now, you have to understand, liberals would be offended that you're talking war. The plishtim are implacable enemy, and they're just waiting to attack. So to kill them, so it's all part of the war. So well, what was the request here for the 100 Orlos plishtim? So in fact, Shul was very clever. One of two things will happen. Either, it's an unusual request, certainly. So the Malbim says, either he'll get killed trying to do it, or he won't get killed, and he'll succeed, and then the plishtim will make him a target. Because one thing to win in battle, all is fair in love and war. It's one thing to win in battle, but when you mutilate the enemy, which is part of the viciousness that unfortunately exists today in the Arab world, when you mutilate the enemy, so then it becomes more personal. Then it's a grudge. And so David will become singled out for vengeance. So in fact, David goes to battle. Vayakom David vayelech huvanashov vayach ba plishtim masayimish. You want a dowry? I'll give you a dowry. Kill 200 people. 200 foreskins. Vayave David Arlo Sehem. He brought the foreskins. Vayamalum la melech lischatein ba melech. And he sent them all to the king. Here's my gift. What? Some people just be more thankful for a bottle of liquor. But Shaul, he sent these 200 foreskins. Vayiten lo Shaul as Michal bitol Lisha. And that was the deal. So Michal married Shaul. What happened though? So Shaul's intentions were thwarted again. David was not killed by the Plishtim. On the contrary, he seated beyond even his expectations. And secondly, Michal loved him. We'll see in a moment, Shaul then wanted to use Michal, as he later wanted to use Yonatan to get at David. It didn't work. But because of this incident, the Plishtim feared him. They saw him as, you know, Rambo, as a wild warrior, someone who's best to avoid. So in fact, had the opposite effect. They were intimidated by David rather than be so angered. With this jealousy, so jealousy is followed by hatred. Vayosef Shaul le'ro mipnei David od. So now he became even more afraid of David because nothing is working. Vayishol oyevis David kol hayomim. And he became his enemy. So at first we started, he was oyenes David. He eyeballed him. He seethed internally. Now he goes public and David becomes his sworn enemy. Turn the page. Yeah, that last point was in 13, by the way, that last section. What's that? Number... There's no number 8 on the page. Well, isn't that curious? It's like a table at the wedding that you decided, well, they're not coming, I'll just remove the number. Yep, it looks like I left out number 8. Okay, shkoyach. I hope I didn't leave it on my desk. It could be where it is. All right. Yeah, let's look at 14, the Radak. So at the end of the day, what's that? Right. At the end of the day, Michal bas Shaul, Aivasu, she loved David. And the Radak says, Laficha Hosif Liro Mipanov Lishnei Dvarim. Now Shaul was afraid twofold. One, he saw that Hashem Imo, that God is with David. And second, that Michal loved him, Lo Yuchal Ligrom Lo Misa Yadva, and they can't use her either, which will be his next attempt anyway. So Makore, number 15. This begins Perek Yotes. First, he speaks to Yonasan, his son. Vaskov lo mises David. He informs he wants to kill David. And so this is interspersed with our discussion last week, these psukim. And Yonasan is very friendly with David, loves David. So Yonasan protests on David's behalf. And he extracts from Shaul a promise. Vayishma Shaul b'kol Yonasan vayishava Shaul chay Hashem im yamus. He swears he's not going to kill David. Notice the Mefarshim say, he says chay Hashem im yamus, that if David dies. So in fact it came true, David did not die at the hand of Shaul. He didn't say chay Hashem if I won't kill him or try to kill him. But in fact, what happens? So Shaul is irrational, wants to kill David. Yonasan speaks to him. Once again, the Ruach Ruach passes. He becomes more rational. He's lucid. And he forgets about it for a short time. Short time being two psukim. Number 16. Vatosef hamilchamo lios. So now the war starts again. David goes out and he smites the Plishtim. Vatiruach Hashem Rasa, the news is coming in on the from the battlefield again. David is again a hero. Vatiruach Hashem Royal Shaul, once again, the spirit of the divine spirit of melancholy passes over Shaul. They call David back. The king needs you. He's depressed. David's playing the harp again. Once again, this is spear incident number 2. Vayivakesh Shaul lakos b'chanis b'David uvakir. But this time, vayiftar b'nei Shaul. This time, David sees what's happening. Vayaches achanis bakir, Shaul misses, v'David nos, and David flees. Vayimalek b'laylohu, and then he realizes that, you know what, the first two times, I don't think there was such an accident either. So now David runs and flees into the night. In fact, where does he go? He goes home. Goes to his house, to his wife. Number 17. So Shaul sends his malachim, messengers to David's house, to kill him. Sends his agents in the dead of night. Vatageit l'David michal ishto. I'm sorry, this is still in number 16. Vatageit l'David michal ishto lemor. So David, his wife, Michal, tells him, im ein chom im aleit es nafshecha halayla mochar ta mumos. If you don't escape tonight, tomorrow you're a dead man. Vatorat michal es David b'ara chalon. So Michal lowers him by way of the window. What is reminiscent of? Rochav, exactly. Rochav and the two spies of Moshe, all right? Because on that hinged, on the first incident hinged Kibush Eretz Yisrael. And on this incident hinges Malchus Yisrael, the furtherance of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And David escapes. But the messengers are going to come in the morning. So what happens? They come, and she tells her father that David is sick. He can't come. So he then sends more messengers to see that he's actually sick. And he tells them he's in bed. He's an easy target. Kill him there. He comes, and he finds the mannequins in the bed. With a goatskin at its head. Meaning, what did Michal do? She set up a mannequin in the bed, looking like David. So if they should look in the window, they'll see that form, so they'll give them time to escape. The Mitzuda Sion has a beautiful pshat, and the Barbanel accepts it as well. What's Trafim? Trafim are statues. So, Hemasuyim Mitzura Sodom. There are statues in the image of man. Mehem lavodas kochavim, sometimes used for idolatry. Umehem letzuras odom yadua, and sometimes a statue in the figure of a well-known person. Vanashim hayu osos al tzuras balehen listakel b'toro merov hava. It was common for women to keep in their homes statues of their husbands. They should. So the women, what's that? It wasn't for Avodah Zarah purposes. So it must be they took off a piece, so it wasn't an idol. But to have mannequins of all the men made, so the women can have something to gaze at when the men are out of the home. What's that? The darts. The darts, right. Whatever use they want. See, right. So Michal essentially deceived her father. But yes, we'll get back to that in a second. Vayom Shaul Michal, Loma Kachari Misini. Why did you deceive me like this? Vatashachi es oivi vayimoleit. He sent my enemy away. He escaped. So Michal says, he told me, let me go or I'll kill you. All right? But in fact, it's not what happened. In fact, what did happen? She helped him escape. And Shaul realizes that. Like Yehonasan, Michal also favors David. And will protect him from her father. Yonason also intervenes. That's the part we did last week. And Shaul again swears not to harm David, but depression will soon overtake him again. Where does Shaul find himself next? Next, where does he go? V'David Barach. This is number 21. I'm sorry, this is number 17, correct. David runs away by Yavo Shmuel Haramasa. First time comes to Shmuel. Vayagedlo Eskal Asher Solo Shul. Tells him everything that happened. Meaning until now, Shmuel Anavi is in the dark. Does not know. Doesn't read the local papers. Really, people in the country not aware of what's going on. The two of them go and they spent time in Nayos. Now, it's interesting. So again, the simple pshat is that he went to inform David, he went to inform Shmuel of what's happening, and saying, "No, you anointed me, I'm Mashiach Hashem. You have to do something." So Shmuel does something. He does something which reinforces to David what his mission is, as well as, I hope, also puts in a new light what's happening here. Note the pasuk said, "Vayishvu b'Nayos," and then "Vayugad l'Shaul Lemor." That's in 22. "Hinei David b'Nayos baramah." David is in Nayos in Ramah. So it's two separate places. So the Gemara says in Zvachim, Daf Nun Dalam at Beis, which is number 19. Dorash Rava, Maidichsiv, Vayelach Tavi Shmuel, Vayish Benayos Baramah. What does it mean they went to Nayos in Ramah? Vichima Inyan Nayos Eitzel Ramah. What's the connection? Nayos, there's two separate towns. Like saying, I'm going to Teaneck Fairlawn. Well, what are we talking about? Elawat, Shahayosh Bi Ramah. They went to Ramah. That's where Shmuel was. Shmuel Ramati. Ve'oskim b'noyos shel olam. They became involved in the beauty of the world. What's the beauty of the world? The Beis HaMikdash. Amrei k'siv v'kamto v'alisa l'makom. The Torah says you'll go and ascend to the place where the Beis HaMikdash will be. What were they doing here? Shmuel said, now he introduced David to the esoteric of Malchus. The real Melech Yisrael is to build the Beis HaMikdash. The first thing we have to do, so you'll know that you're king, and you will be the king, is we have to ascertain where the Beis HaMikdash is going to be. They just had a Mesorah where it was. Because all the Torah said was, El HaMakom, Asher Yivchar Hashem, the place that God chooses. But there's no indication in the Torah where it was. Ah, you'll say, because you know from the Torah, where Adam built the Mizbeach, Cain and Hevel built the Mizbeach, Noach built the Mizbeach, Abram the Akedah, Har Moriah, etc. Yeah, but they're not going, even if they do know that, they won't know where exactly Har Moriah, where is the Mizbeach to be, where is the Kodesh HaKadosh going to be. Melamed Shebeis HaMikdash Govah Mikol Eretz Yisrael, the Beis HaMikdash was the highest place, spiritual sense, in the land of Israel. And Israel is the highest of all the lands. Lo havayade duchte hecha. They didn't know where it was, though. They brought it to Sefer Yoshua. Vikulu ksiv. When Yoshua was delineating the borders of the tribes, with each tribe it says, Viarad v'alo, viarad v'alo. They descend and ascend. V'shevet binyamin, v'alo ksiv, v'yarad lo ksiv. Amri shmamino hochu makomo. It has to be somewhere where Binyamin will reside. What's happening here? It's interesting, fascinating, that what we read already has many, many parallels to the story of Yaakov, and especially, as I noted at the outset, to the rivalry of Rachel and Leah. First of all, you have essentially Shaul offering two wives to David and then taking one away, which is what Lavan did. You have also Shaul saying to David, to Michal, Lamari Misini. Who said that? Lavan. I would say Yaakov said that to Lavan. You have Rachel, like Mimi mentioned. Rachel had the trafim. What did Michal put in her bed? Trafim as well. Think back to what I said last week also about David's phrase in his elegy for Yehonah's son, that my love for you is great, ma'avas noship, love of women. And the Ramami Fanu said, what women? Rachel and Leah. Because Rachel loved Leah, so she waived her immediate marriage to Yaakov. But she got married a week later, as opposed to Yonatan, permanently waived his rights to the throne. Here, the rivalry of Rachel and Leah really reaches its climax. Although it'll recur again after the reign of Shlomo HaMelech, when the kingdom again splits. But in fact, what you have here is a reverse. As difficult as it was, Rachel stepped aside and allowed Leah to marry Yaakov. So now what's supposed to happen? Now Rachel is supposed to step aside, the Ben Rachel, Shaul, and allow the Ben Leah, David, to become king. So the B'nai Rachel, as we discussed a number of times already, B'nai Yosef especially, they build the material infrastructure of the Jewish people. That's Mashiach ben Yosef. He builds the physical foundation of the reborn Jewish state, but he dies. He's in charge of the material. And he's replaced by Mashiach ben David from Yehuda. Sheva Yehuda, the B'nai Leo, build the spiritual infrastructure of Klal Yisrael. So you see, in fact, it's not built on layers necessarily, but one is supposed to merge into the other. And that's the transition here. It wouldn't be proper to have the Malchus B'nai Rachel end abruptly and then have Malchus B'nai Leah just imposed on top of it. Because that would imply that the Malchus B'nai Rachel is inferior, is subordinate to Malchus B'nai Leah. It is subordinate, but not without value of its own. It's really a spiral staircase, Malchus Yisrael. So that's why you had to have Malchus B'nai Rachel and this long period, that was a year or two, this period whereby there was a very uneasy, even strife-filled transition, and then Malchus B'nai Leah takes over after that. That was the process. David had to wrest the monarchy from Shaul. He can't simply succeed him. And it can't be done in a way which exacerbates the breach between the tribes, B'nai Rachel, B'nai Leah, or intensifies the rivalry. The monarchy has to heal the breach. That's the job of leadership, of Malchus Yisrael. It's as if they reign together for a time, Shaul and David. So people should see this transition, not one destroying the other, like a new administration tries to erase and nullify the accomplishments of the previous one, but rather the building together in a spiraling way. The people see the transition. It's not as if David defeats Shaul. Rather, it's the will of God that Shaul reigns, and then they merge, and then David reigns. Of course, as we know, two Malchios, two Melachim, cannot reign together. So the only way you could have a temporary merger is when it's filled with hostility and filled with enmity. But yet that was necessary for the transition from one Malchus to the next. What happens now? David begins the process of Binyan Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash, as we know, is in the territories of both Binyamin and Yehuda. Chofef olav kol hayom uven k'seifov shochein. That there's a peninsula of Binyamin that juts into the territory of Yehuda. So really the Beis HaMikdash is divided almost equally in the territory of Binyamin and Yehuda. So you have the B'nai Rachel and the B'nai Leah coalesce at the national center, the Makom HaMikdash. That is what Shmuel taught David now. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says in Zvachim Noyoshel Olam, what were they attempting to do? Number 20, Limtso Makom LeBeis HaBchira Min HaTorah, finding a place. That's how David spent this night. Once he fled Shaul with Shmuel, trying to ascertain where the Beis HaMikdash would be. And the Yalkut says something else, which is not contradictory. In 21, that Rav Huna Rav Yossi Amar Oso HaLaila Shebarach David Milifnei Shaul, that night when David fled Shaul, Lamad Mishmuel Anovi Mashein Talmud Vosik Lamei B'mei Hashana. He learned, he assimilated that night ideas of Torah from Shmuel Anavi that even a good Talmud would not be able to learn in 100 years. Meaning it was a night really that in terms of Talmud Torah was Lamala Min Ateva. It was supernatural. Because here now David is invested really with the essence of the monarchy. Before, it was a little oil on the head and a prediction, prophecy from Shmuel, you're going to be Melech Yisrael. Now it takes on a different dimension altogether, because now Shmuel says, this is what Malchus Yisrael is. You'll defeat Amalek, that we know. You'll be the leader of in terms of Torah, and you build the Beis HaMikdash. That's what Klal Yisrael are looking for. That's in the future. Shmuel then finds out that, Shaul then finds out that David has fled, and once again he pursues him. In 22, first he sends, an interesting story also, he sends Malachim, Lakacha says David, because he hears that David's in Nayos Baramah, Vayaras Lakasa Nevi'im Nibim, when they came, these agents of Shaul, they see a group of prophets prophesying. Shmuel Omeg, Nitzavalim, Shmuel standing over them. Chazal say, cryptic Chazal, that he was teaching them from Megillas Beis HaMikdash. Fatial Malachei Shol Ruach Elohim Ayesnabu Gam Hema. These agents of Shaul, they started prophesying as well. What were they prophesying? So Radak says in 26, Nibim Klomar, they were just singing praise to God, overcome by spiritual rapture. They were in spiritual ecstasy. They just, the environment just moved them to sing God's praises. Maybe they were even prophesying in this elevated state of consciousness about events that would happen in the very near future. Okay, so they began prophesying as well. They stayed there in the company of Shmuel and Avi. Shaul sends other messengers, and the same thing happens to them. And finally, he himself goes to find out what is happening here. Why are they not killing David on my behalf? Why are they being drawn into Shmuel's circle? Vayelech gamhu haramasa. He comes to Ramah, comes to the Bor Gadol. The Bor was always the central meeting place. And he says, Efos Shmuel v'David, where are they? And they say, B'nayos b'Ramah. Good. Vayelech Shom El Nayos b'Ramah. He goes there. He goes to that company of prophets. V'atihi olav gamhu ruach Elohim. Vayelech Holoch. Shaul himself starts prophesying. By the way, I left out a point, very important point. So that was Radak. Radak said they were just raptured. The Barbanel in 23 says something differently. He says, why didn't they go back? It's because if you look at 9 lines down, Ratzalomar, Magidim Hasidlios, they began prophesying about the future. Vehu, Sheyimloch David al Kol Yisrael. They start a prophecy that David is going to be the next king. Now you know why they didn't go back to Shaul. Now you know why they didn't want to kill David either, or try to kill him. They start a prophecy that David is the next king. That was their nevuah. Vishalo yashlito lokim el shul amiso. And God will not allow Shaul to kill David. That's what Shaul found out when he got there. So in fact, the prophecy was a real prophecy that became Nevi'im. Shaul comes, and he too is overcome. And he has another transformation. Obviously, he had now, unfortunately, schizophrenic tendencies. He goes up and down. He's very, very, very severe mood swings. Vayivshat gam hu bigadov, he tore off his clothing. Chazal say, in Rashi, in 25, Bigdei Malchus, he took off his royal garb. Lilbosh Bigdet Hamidim, he was so moved by the atmosphere, he wanted to be like everybody else. Vayisnabe gam hu lifnei Shaul, lifnei Shmuel. He also started to prophesy. I don't know if he prophesied that David is going to be the king, but he started prophesying too. Vayipol arom kol yomahu b'chol alayla, and he just fell unclothed the entire day of night, meaning he completely gave himself over to the prophetic experience. Al Ken Yomru, that's why they say, Hagam Shaul Banviim, is Shaul also among the prophets? Now this is actually a catchphrase in Hebrew. But it means here one of two things. Either it's said by way of surprise, or it's said by way of praise, rather. Look, Hagam Shaul Banvi'im. Shaul's also among the prophets. It speaks well. Or sometimes used today as a very subtle put-down in Israel. Hagam Shaul Banvi'im, meaning someone is a level jumper. He's a little ahead of himself. So Shaul is the melech. Does he think he's a Navi also? He was surprised at the way the king. But the simple pshat here is that it's meant in a praiseworthy, a laudatory manner, that here Shaul once again recovers himself and joins the company of the prophets. It won't last long. The Ralbag says right here, Al-Attar, that why was Shaul given the gift of prophecy? That's God's choice. He'll be a prophet. Why? To give David a chance to escape. Because once David heard that Shaul is now in Ramah, so he'll get turned in an instant. And therefore David flees again. Let's understand by way of summary what's happening here. So in fact, this entire feud between Shaul and David, it's unnecessary, of course, in the sense that it's unusual, and the classical tzaddik will never fall prey to these bad midos. But we're people too, and even tzaddikim sin. And it was necessary in a providential way to take place. I suppose the best analogy would be to the Mechiras Yosef. It's identical. The brothers were wrong in what they did in selling Yosef, but yet they did serve the needs of Hashgacha in getting people down to Egypt. Once Yosef realized that, then he made peace with his brothers right away. It's the same thing here. The brothers did what they did because of their own sins. Shaul did here what he did because of his sins. But it's not just that. It's that it's the Rotzon Hashem that Malchus Yisrael unfolds that way. Why? So we have to speculate. First, David is introduced to a very common phenomenon. And that is the Melech Yisrael is never universally loved, never universally extolled. People always find fault with a Jewish leader, so he should not become arrogant. So David, even before he becomes the Melech, he acquaints himself with the notion that he has enemies. Sefer Tehillim is rife with David's references to the way his numerous enemies, tried to destroy him. Secondly, the Melech Yisrael will always be a target. They're enemies amongst the Jews, not just non-Jews. Amongst the Jews are also factions. Those support, those against, those in between. So the Melech, in fact, must try to heal the rift in the people. And that became David's Nisayon. Well, how is he going to respond? Is he going to kill Shaul? Justified. Habala har gecha, shkem bar go. Self-defense. He's allowed to do it. But will that send a message to the people that David is a dictatorial tyrant who kills to get power? So David tries a different approach. It's an Nisayon. Here a man's trying to kill you. You don't kill him. He tries to mollify Shaul. He doesn't replace Rachel, but in fact transcends Rachel. So what you have is not a mere succession, but you have a progression from the B'nai Rachel to the B'nai Leah. What else happens? So obviously the catalyst was Kinah. Mentioned last week, the Medrash Shirim Rabbah 27, Ki Hazoch HaMoves Ava, that's Yonasan and David, Kasha Kisho Kinah, that's the Kinah, the jealousy. Jealousy is difficult as the grave. Kinosha kinei Shaul David. The jealousy that Shaul had for David was very intense, very powerful. But Rav Ariel mentions in 24 the interesting thing about jealousy. It can come from two sources. One is hatred, and one is love. Ki azoch hamoves ahava kasha kishol kino. Jealousy and love are not mutually exclusive. And on some level, he writes, it's not 24, it's 28. On some level, he writes that it feeds on each other. The person who has strong love will also be very jealous for his love. Not always of his love, but for his love too. Perkeinu madgish shein eil shnei malchim nifradim. It's not two separate paths, David and Shmuel, or kina ava. El shamalach echad mazin et hasheni. One feeds the other. And in fact, Shaul, in his great kina and fear of David, Gorem b'masov nega David la'aliyatel shel David. Note, everything that Shaul tried to do to kill him, in fact, elevated David in the eyes of the people. So he continues that in fact, this way David acquires the support of the people, the enthusiasm of the people. He marries a princess of Israel. As often as Shaul tries to lower him, David is raised above that. These are shtei ponim elu masov etotzoteihem meidot gam al kitov b'nafsho shel Shaul atzmo. All these point to the polarization that exists in Shaul's own personality. He's ambivalent. He has two different feelings for David. He has tremendous love for David. We'll see later on when they encounter each other. It's Bni David, David my son. He has tremendous love for David. He has tremendous jealousy of David as well. And those emotions really compete in Shaul's psyche for supremacy. And it's not quite resolved. He physically can't kill David. But it's interesting. Whenever he has the opportunity, he seems to flinch. So you say, why does he flinch? Because Hashem Imo, God is with David. Rav Ariel suggests another reason also. He wanted to kill David, yes, but he's ambivalent about it too. So whenever he does try to kill him, somehow it never works out. What else happens? To be the Melech of Jews is no easy task. But the Jewish leader has to be steady. Has to stay the course. He has to know his mission, never get deflected. It is in 24 where Ariel writes, then why did David run to Shmuel Anavi? Shmuel doesn't have any divisions to protect David. What solace, what refuge does he seek? Not the Ir Miklat, the physical Ir Miklat. What he seeks, in fact, is a spiritual Ir Miklat. And that's also the Derech HaMelech, the way of the king, really the way of Klal Yisrael. Very often, when we encounter terrible persecution, we try to immerse ourselves in Torah, because it clears our mind, enables us to think better. It gives us a greater handle, a clear handle on what our destiny is. Someone in the shul just told me a story about their father-in-law who was in Hungary when the war was ending, and he was a teenager at the time, and he was in hiding, and they just learned every day. Just learned. That's how he and two, three friends spent their day, because they had nothing else. They were in hiding. And the Russians were bombing Budapest, and they were hiding in a basement, and the building was bombed. And the floors of the building just fell like a cake, one on top of the other, and stopped right over the floor they were learning. And that's how he was saved. That's the Derech HaMelech. In these sorrows, where does a person find, what does David say? Lulei Tarascha Shashuai, Shlomo Karlbach song. If the Torah wasn't my plaything, I would have been lost in my torment. That's also an example the Melech Yisrael sets. No Jew is too busy that he can't learn Torah. Even the Melech, especially the Melech, sets that example. David was previously anointed the king of Israel. Now in Nayot, in Ramah, he realizes the stakes. It's not just who's going to be the ruler. He realizes the mission, the future, the destiny of Israel, the Beis HaMikdash. There'll be other attempts on David's life also, but now David has the confidence that he's going to survive and he's going to prosper and he has a future ahead. Look how Rav Ariel ends in number 29. Gilgulim Rabim Tavor. There'll be many other things happen, many cycles, many stories, many events. Until this Beis HaMikdash that he first plotted in Nayot comes to fruition and is built. This is where it starts, at this moment. It's sealed in the final vision in Sefer Shmuel, where the Malach shows David, reveals to David in the threshing floor of Aravna Hayavusi, Hamevilu Binyana Mizbeah. Shomistayemet Parshato Shel David Bakshamat Chazon Malchut from Mitad Shel Shmuel. That's where the story of Shmuel, that's why Sefer Shmuel ends there. Then the Shmuel Beis, we have time for that. But Shmuel Beis ends when David finds the place and buys that place from Aravna Hayavusi. This is where it starts. Shmuel inculcates in David exactly what Malchus is and imparts to him exactly what the Melch is supposed to be. Now David has a new lease on life. For sure, he'll continue to be ravaged by Shaul's paranoia. But Shaul will die on the battlefield. He's not going to die by David's hand, which is also part of the Nisayon. And Shaul's role here in preparing David for Malchus, it's not only going to be understood, but it's going to be acknowledged, and in fact on some level also appreciated, that Shaul was acting really not in keeping with his character in what he was doing here. Just like in a general sense, neither did the brothers of Yosef act in accordance with their character. Yeah, midah rah consumed them, and they acted in an exceptional way. So that same thing happened to Shaul. He had a midah rah, and he acted in an exceptional way. But he acted in a way, ultimately, that fulfilled the design of Hashgacha, prepared David for Malchus, and not only Malchus then, but David Melch Yisrael, Chai V'Kayam. Okay, thank you for coming.